each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds of Change. Father Tom Coyce here, which is a brain-wrinkling Wednesday if you're listening live or whenever you're listening to on the podcast. I do want to return to an interesting topic, one of my favorite, but I know I'm swimming with the sharks and way out of my league, but it's the questions about science and the origin of the universe, the creation of life in the universe. It's on my mind because we're going to have a little discussion on creation versus evolution in our little adult education session. If you're anywhere near St. James of Sag tonight, this is Wednesday, April 24th, you can come by. We have what we call wine and wisdom, and we've been getting some really interesting topics. A couple of weeks ago, we had Gavin Ashenden, the Anglican bishop who was one of the chaplains to Queen Elizabeth, and he became Catholic. Amazing. We also had a professor from Ireland recently, professor of Ireland, a guy by the name of Murphy, Patrick Murphy, who spoke of the sad state of Catholic education in Ireland and the importance of starting some new Catholic schools. And so he was explaining that. It's kind of like Chesterton Academy here in the Chicagoland area, or actually Chesterton is a lot of places. If you haven't heard of them, do a little research. It's a wonderful Catholic school, stripped of a lot of the fancy stuff that kids love to go to high school for, like a big football stadium or a big theater program or, let's see, real elaborate science laboratories, things like that. But the Chesterton Academy and what Patrick Murphy was talking about was kind of getting to the basics and trying to build an education with a solid Catholic understanding of education and of reality, of the universe, of life. Okay. Anyways, so I want to tackle again. I know I'm swimming in waters that I'm not a great expert on, but by some of the reading I have is just wrinkling my brain. So when my brain gets wrinkled, guess what? I got to try to wrinkle your brain as well. And that is the whole debate between science and religion. It fits in that category. And I know a lot of people aren't so much interested in creationism as a controversial topic. It's like, well, okay, if God made the world in 6 days, he'd made the world in 6 days. If he didn't, so be it. If he made it in 6 million days, then that's fine with me. And I sort of fit in that category. It doesn't really interest me that much. about how many days it took God to create the world. The obviously, well, maybe not so obviously, but for me, the more interesting thing is, it is God. Can God be found in the nature? As we look at nature, as we look at the world around us, the universe. The universe, both great, like all the galaxies spread throughout the billions and billions of light years of space throughout the universe, or as we look at tiny, 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 tiny things, which are that scientists are discovering more and more tiny, tiny, tiny things. As a matter of fact, some of the tiny, tiny things that they say exist, they say exist not because they can see them, but because they must be there in order to show or to prove something is going on, especially in tiny subatomic particles. That's what they call quantum physics. You hear that word a lot. And if you have any young people going to school and they're into science and what have you, they like that word, quantum physics. Just remember that you could sort of accept the idea that, physics is all the laws about the material world that we mostly see, either with our naked eye or with telescopes and all the rest. The James Webb telescope, which is flying out around the Earth, way past the moon, but not as far as Mars, somewhere in between our moon and Mars, is the James Webb telescope, taking amazing, amazing images, pictures, not only just with, not only just like a camera like you and I would use, which captures regular light, but they take pictures with infrared, which is a little bit different kind of picture. Anyways, that's, I would like to help you navigate through some of this crazy scientific stuff by going over and trying to explain some of the key concepts behind all of this. As I say, and I think it's on my mind, maybe it's on my mind since the solar eclipse. I talked about that a couple of weeks ago, and I was able to see the total eclipse. And one of my priest friends, Father Tim Salpe, great guy from the Peoria Diocese, put together a wonderful weekend leading up to the total eclipse. And a number of people gave talks, scientific talks about the universe and how studying the universe can really help you appreciate God, the designer. That's what it's all about. You know, when I try to follow and try to read some of this stuff and look at videos, and there's a lot of Protestant scientists, and I'm going to use one of them. You've heard me probably talk about this before, a book by Stephen Meyer, Return of the God Hypothesis. He's not a Catholic. He's a Christian. There's a lot of Christian scientists trying to share with the world their amazing discovery that the world can lead you to believe in God. And, okay, that's something to be grateful for, but what needs to be said is, especially Protestant Christians should sort of feel a little embarrassed. Protestant theologians who accept the foundational principles of Protestant Christianity, namely sola scriptura and sola fide, the Bible alone or and faith alone, those two fundamental principles of Martin Luther and all of Protestant Christianity. So these Christian scientists who are all excited about sharing this new insight that studying the universe can lead you to some wonderful conclusions about that there must be a God. I'm saying they should be a little embarrassed because Catholics have been saying that for a long, long time, That's basically what Thomas Aquinas taught. And Thomas Aquinas, of course, is one of the fundamental Catholic theologians in his five proofs for God's existence. And so, and all the five proofs for God's existence from Thomas Aquinas are variations of this kind of form of proof. Look at the universe and you have the uncaused cause. look at the universe and see how things cause. There's a cause and an effect. Cause and effect. And so I almost want to call up every Protestant Christian scientist who's all excited about either intelligent design or the fine-tuning of the universe. Those are two key concepts. They're very related, but I always want to talk to them and say, I think you should be considering Catholicism, because Protestantism, with its two fundamental principles, won't lead you to where you're going, or you've discovered sort of the Catholic principle in helping people get to God, which is basically discovering that nature can lead you to God, as opposed to just the Bible or just someone's personal experience that makes one accept faith alone. However you get to faith alone, it's usually by personal experience or love of someone else or just an interpretation of how things happen in life, you know, one way or another. But the study of the universe is, I guess I have to say, kind of specifically Catholic twist to discovering God. Anyways, okay, so let me say, this is Ben Stein had a documentary called "Expelled: No Reason Allowed." This is a good little snippet from that documentary. I'd like you to listen to this because it does set the stage, and I'll try to, as I say, try to break down some of the key concepts that are involved in this. The issue between the relationship between science and religion. It's one of my two or three favorite, one of my other favorite themes is the relationship between church and state. I'm sure you've heard me say it's a very important topic when you look at the history of humankind, and the relationship between church and state is everywhere in all the different stories of wars and peace and the debates between churches and all the rest. Now, this is another favorite theme, and I want it to be one of your favorite themes too, because the relationship between religion and science is often used by those who don't like religion. Your relatives who don't go to church anymore. Or maybe it's you that you've drifted away and you start to have doubts about truths you've learned in religion, and you then put more faith in the truths you learn from scientists. This is a little part of the Ben Stein Expelled, No Reason Allowed. It goes like this.
Intelligent design.
I think it is.
I wouldn't put Ben Stein's money on Dr. Roos's joyriding crystals, but it did make me wonder, what were the chances of life arising on its own?
It's been speculated that probably there would have to be a minimum of about 250 proteins to provide minimal life function. If that's really true, then I think it's almost inconceivable that life could have happened in some simple step-by-step way.
Okay, so...
So let me phrase this or put this in context a little. They're talking about the chances of life forming in the universe by chance. that's the key concept we have here. The non-religious like to point to the fact that we don't need a God to explain life in the universe, or especially Adam and Eve being created. The whole debate with Darwin focuses our attention on that that moment in history when the Adam and Eve first appeared in this universe, and what were Adam and Eve before God put their souls into them? Were they apes? And then they put, then God put souls in them. That's what the focus of the Darwinian theory is. And Darwin, a lot of non-religious scientists today are poo-pooing the Darwinian theory of the creation of the first human beings, Adam and Eve, we could say. But that's the gist of the problem is, do you need God to explain either Adam and Eve appearing? And of course, Darwin would have said no, because it was through random selection and a chance mutations in different animals and organisms over thousands, millions of years. It just could randomly, by chance, you know, by trial and error, shall we say, you know, you can get the first human being. So we don't need God. The same question or the same line of questioning is alive and well, even pushed back farther into the life of the universe, where you'd say, okay, you're debating whether or not God is needed to get to Adam and Eve. Scientists are kicking around the question now, do you need a God to get even to the first single cell living organism? Because obviously a living organism is different than an inanimate organism, right? So that's where this little clip is coming in, trying to say, well, what if it is by chance and there is no God, what's the chance, right? And it goes like this.
The simplest form of life requires at least 250 proteins to function. What's so difficult about that?
And now here's
welcome
a little cartoon.
To the casino of life. Who wants to spin for a chance to win?
Oh, sure. I'll give it a shot.
It's
what
cartoon.
Do I win?
Take a look at this.
You're wondering, how are you going to get...
How about the world's first single-cell organism? This perfectly aligned string of proteins could be yours.
Now,
how are
take
we gonna
a
get
spin.
To the first single-cell organism? And he pulls the
Cheetah,
blackjack.
Tell him how many times
machine.
He needs to do that to win the prize.
250.
That's right, folks. And all in the correct order.
But that's impossible.
We've heard that before, haven't we, Richard?
And now
come
the cartoon
on, Mother
goes,
Nature, do your thing.
Richard Hawkins.
You stupid machine.
Trying to pull the
you.
Lever on the blackjack machine. I really recommend this documentary by Ben Stein, Expelled, No Reason Allowed, even though some of the scientists at my Total Eclipse retreat were poo-pooing it a little bit. One of the priests asked the question about that movie, and one of the speakers, I think he's an astrophysicist, or at least he's a cosmologist, one kind or another, and he said, "Oh, that documentary was filled with a lot of errors." But he made the mistake, which too many speakers make, and that is when somebody says, "Oh, I believe in X," And the speaker responds by saying, no, that's, you shouldn't believe X because there's too many errors. Let's move along. If you're not going to point out the errors of position X, then just saying there's too many errors is really unscientific. That's what this guy said when he was poo-pooing this video of Expelled, no Reason Allowed. He says, oh, there's a lot of inconsistencies and bad science in there. But he didn't say what errors there were that we should watch out for. There may be a little thing here or there, but it's generally a very good documentary which explains what's going on in the world today, especially because how dependence on science as a way to avoid religion can easily be seen as how chaos, wars, division, calamities of all sorts, terrible things happening are produced. Stand only on what science teaches and ignore God, or even insult those who try to find God, and the world is pays the price for it. Okay, there's a little bit more of that when I get back, but let's take our first break. All right, Daniel, I'm Father Tom Coyes. On the Winds of Change, you're listening to AM 750.
The William Baker Festival Singers, directed by Dr. William O. Baker, is a 50-voice semi-professional chorale based in Kansas City. They will join us at St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish for the 5 p.m. Mass on Saturday, April 27th, to perform a short concert of sacred music immediately following liturgy. You are invited to be inspired by the beauty of the music as performed by the William Baker Festival Singers, who are sharing their gifts with us on Saturday, April 27th. There is no charge for this concert, and there's plenty of free parking. St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish can be found 2 blocks north on Noble, off Division, adjacent to the Kennedy Expressway. Visit stsandschurch.org for more information.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
For 150 years, St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy has been an oasis that builds a moral foundation for your child based upon Catholic faith, virtue, and valor, along with strong academic preparation for children pre-kindergarten through 8th grade. Here's how you can help St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy and have a good time. Come out and play for St. Stan's Academy during the annual Casino Night Fundraiser, Saturday, April 25th at 6 p.m. Enjoy casino games, food, drinks, and great music, all while helping to support St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, Saturday, April 25th at 6 p.m. Now, you must be 21 or over. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is located at 1255 North Noble in Chicago. That's 1 block north on Noble, off Division, just off the Kennedy.
What are my chances?
Not good.
You mean not good like 1 out of 100?
I'd say more like 1 out of 1,000,000.
So you're telling me there's a chance? Yeah!
I couldn't help but share that with you. One of my favorite scenes. That's from Dumb and Dumber. If you wanted to know, oh, wait a while. It's when Jim Carrey is pursuing this lovely lady, and when he finally meets up with her. It's funny because when someone tells you the chances are 1 in 1,000,000, you should say there's no chance. But Jim Carrey says he's glad that there's at least 1 in 1,000,000 chance. It's funny because that's not the way our brains work. And that applies to the issue of this relationship between science and religion, because the scientists are trying to keep religion out of the public square, out of your public schools, because God is not needed to explain the universe. The universe happened by chance, but every scientist now knows it's the universe in order to have created the first single cell organism, let alone Adam and Eve. The elements of the universe had to coincide, the forces in the universe, the laws of nature have to be what we call fine-tuned in such a way that if they were just not tuned in exactly the right way, then life itself wouldn't have happened. So that's what's at stake here. And as again, I don't mean to pick on my wonderful Protestant scientists, but those, many of them are doing great work, like this Stephen Meyer. I like his book, The Return of the God Principle, The God Hypothesis. They should be a little embarrassed, or they should be pulled toward Catholicism, because sola scriptura means truth is only found in the Bible, and you don't look at nature to find God. And Catholicism has always thought nature, our study of nature, can wonderfully lead us to God. Of course, the Bible can and does and is necessary. But that appreciation of the fingerprint of God in the world he created is so vital. Let me play just a little bit more of what this documentary by Ben Stein, Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed, goes like this.
We're talking about something that's staggeringly improbable, roughly one in a trillion, 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 trillion.
Let all of life choose a million, a trillion.
That was six trillions, by the way, for all.
A trillion, trillion, the number is essentially zero. Something has to skew nature to choose the ones that work.
So, in the game of life, it looks as if the house always wins. Luckily, some serious scientific minds have figured out a way to beat the odds.
Directed panspermia.
When faced with the overwhelming problem of the origin of life, Nobel Prize winner Francis Crick proposed this theory, that life was seeded on Earth, which basically means aliens did it.
I learned a little phrase back in philosophy class that we all should know, because it does come about. It's a way of pushing an atheistic or agnostic, scientific, non-practicing religious person off their balance, and that is the theme of infinite regress. Remember that little phrase, infinite regress, because it's a key factor that can and should be used. We need to teach a lot of our young students, grade school, high school, college, the power of this little phrase. You mean your argument seems to just be an infinite regress, which is related to what Ben Stein just said. There are scientists who know that life on Earth was very. It's hard to explain how life came on Earth, but one of the explanations is, well, it was seeded from other planets in our universe, and of course that doesn't answer the question where did life come from, because you could just say, well, where did the life come from on those other planets? And if they say that life came from other planets, you could say, okay, that's fine, but where did that seed come from the other planets? And there's an infinite regress. You're not answering the question by just saying it came from other planets. So that's a key factor in our intelligent faith that is right up there with all the other kinds of smart scientists out there. We didn't have to worry about that. You know, and that leads me, I'm going to try. This is one thing. I'm reading through Stephen Meyer's books about the scientific evidence for God. And I'm going to go out on a limb here because I'm trying to understand the concept of dark matter. Did you ever hear that phrase, dark matter? I'm going to call it the Sasquatch of cosmologists. The reason I say that is because, well, you know, Bigfoot, Sasquatch. We don't really have evidence that there is a Sasquatch, but a lot of people do believe in him or it. I'm sure you've seen pictures. And there's statues. Yeah, whenever you go to a statuary place here, or it's in a number of bars, and especially like biker bars, or down south, I saw a bunch of them in Tennessee. They always have these little statues of, or sometimes it's a big statue of Sasquatch. Anyways, as far as I could know, and I would certainly love to be educated more on it, but I'll give you my sense here at this moment. Scientists have come up with this term called black matter because they're trying to explain phenomenon about the universe in such a way that you don't need God as the intelligent designer, and you certainly don't want to say that the Earth is in the center of the universe. The way some scientists are examining the incredibly amazing distant galaxies found in our universe through the Webb telescope, they're scratching their heads because one of the key elements, one of the key laws of nature is gravitational force, right? We all know that if you jump up and down on Earth, you're only going to go up so far, but if you jump up and down on the moon, you'll go higher because you're going to weigh less. Why? Because the moon is a smaller body than the Earth. If you go to Jupiter and you jump up and down, you're going to jump even less than the Earth. Why? Because Jupiter is much bigger than the Earth. So, in other words, that gravitational pull of the mass of the planet is a constant in the universe. And that gravitational pull has a lot to do with the way the universe was formed. Gravitational pull is one of four key elements, four key forces or energies, four key, they're often called forces. There's a force called gravitational pull. There's another force called electromagnetic pull. Just like you see, a magnet will pull a metal object towards it. That's not gravitational force, it's electromagnetic force. And then when you get into the analyzing atoms, of course, atoms are made up of protons, electrons, and neutrons. The electrons are the tiniest little particles spinning around the nuclei or nucleon. The nucleus is made up of the protons and neutrons. There's a force in every atom that is doing, one force is holding it together and another force is pulling it apart. So they call that the nuclear, I think they call that a heavy force and a light force. And you can see that that makes a lot of sense. If you have this little thing called an atom, and it's made up of other little things, and they're spinning around, and they're together, they hold together. Something should be holding them together, but why is the electron flying around, or why do sometimes if it's broken, it flies apart, right? So the four forces, the four basic forces in the universe, which scientists aren't arguing about these things. They all agree that we found these things, or we know these things. But if these forces were not the way they were, then the universe wouldn't operate the way it operates. And if the universe didn't operate the way it operates, then the first single cell living organism would never have been able to come about. So getting back to this dark matter, as scientists are looking at distant galaxies, now we know that there's gazillion galaxies out there, not just stars, each containing gazillion stars themselves. But anyways, those distant galaxies are operating. Here's one of the things they are scratching their heads about. They're going away from us at a certain speed, but galaxies that are twice as far away from us are going at a speed twice as fast than a galaxy closer to us. Okay, got our galaxy, and you got the next galaxy, which amazingly Webber telescope shows us that our galaxy is somewhat unique in other galaxies in that our closest neighbors are much farther apart than the galaxies of the neighboring galaxies of the other galaxies. But be that as it may, that speed at which they're moving away from us has a certain constant speed, which relates to that power of, like I was talking about in a little atom, shoom, that power that shoots elements away from it, nuclear power. You could sort of understand that, and even a basic sense that things fly away, like in an explosion. So those galaxies that are twice as far from the Earth are going twice as fast as the one that's only one time as far away from the Earth. And the galaxies that are three times farther away from the Earth are traveling farther away from us at three times the speed. So these are some of the calculations they come up with, especially and this is where it just takes a lot of trust to believe scientists can calculate such things, by analyzing the light that you're getting, the red shift light, the red light shift, because red is lower, we can call it the lower end of the spectrum of a light beam, shall we say. If it's farther away, you're going to get more reddish color. So, as a matter of fact, modern scientists have a lot of computers to help them gauge how much farther, how much red, how much littler red, what color is above red. It's the purple, green, blue, all that. One of the scientists on our retreat had mentioned that, I think it was Galileo, or it might even have been Copernicus, one of the early astronomers. he made a little graph of the red light spectrum of starlight just by looking at it with his eyes without any other instruments. And what he guessed or what he posited is very close to what scientists have today. It's an amazing little, maybe it was the good Lord that gave him that insight, shall we say. Anyways, okay, let me try to give it a little bit more, but let's take our next break here, and I'll try to explain some of these a little more concepts. I got to try to explain why I think dark matter is the Sasquatch of atheistic cosmologists today. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You are listening to The Winds of Change. We are on AM 750.
The William Baker Festival Singers, directed by Dr. William O. Baker, is a 50-voice semi-professional chorale based in Kansas City. They will join us at St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish for the 5 p.m. Mass on Saturday, April 27th, to perform a short concert of sacred music immediately following liturgy. You are invited to be inspired by the beauty of the music as performed by the William Baker Festival Singers, who are sharing their gifts with us. On Saturday, April 27th, there is no charge for this concert, and there's plenty of free parking. St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish can be found 2 blocks north on Noble, off Division, adjacent to the Kennedy Expressway. Visit ststandschurch.org for more information. The Winds of Change. For 150 years, St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy has been an oasis that builds a moral foundation for your child based upon Catholic faith, virtue, and valor, along with strong academic preparation for children pre-kindergarten through 8th grade. Here's how you can help St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy and have a good time. Come out and play for St. Stan's Academy during the annual Casino Night Fundraiser, Saturday, April 25th at 6 p.m. Enjoy casino games, food, drinks, and great music, all while helping to support St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, Saturday, April 25th at 6 p.m. Now, you must be 21 or over. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is located at 1255 North Noble in Chicago. That's 1 block north on Noble, off Division, just off the Kennedy.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'm Father Tom Coyes on the Winds of Change. Okay, I have to try to share. I'm sharing with you a crazy hypothesis, and I can just hear some of my scientific friends wanting to tear their hair out, because my hypothesis that I'm sharing with you is that dark matter, as far as I could understand it now, from what my simple brain can grab, seems to be the Sasquatch of atheistic cosmologists. In other words, it's a theory they come up with to try to explain some phenomenon that are modern observations of the universe are giving to us, but they don't have any proof of it there. So, and it has to do with sort of the size of the universe and the speed that planets are flying around and going away from each other, because the speed of the speed of an object flying away from something, it would have to do with the gravitational pull and the expulsion force, or the nuclear force of flying away. There's flying away and there's coming together, and so as they put their mathematical calculations into their computers and try to figure out, there's so much mass in the universe. I don't know how in the world they could possibly come up with how much, in other words, how much does it put all the planets and all the stars together in the universe and put them on a scale and see how much they weigh. how much mass is contained in the universe? That's a crucial thing, because a greater mass then will have a greater gravitational pull, right? To get it? Like my example of jumping up and down on Jupiter, you're going to have stronger gravitational pull than on the moon or even on Earth, right? Okay. So, but gravitational force is only one of the amazing powers or elements. You could call them the constants in the universe. And let me just share with you a bunch of the different ones. No way I could explain all of these, but it's good just to hear. The pull of gravity is one force. Gravitational force as a constant, okay? In other words, if you're standing on a planet that's the same size of Earth, then when you jump up and down, you should jump up and down as high or low as you do here on Earth. If you found another planet that's as big as Jupiter, then you would jump up and down in the same way, because the gravitational force is constant throughout the universe, okay? But that's only one of these variations that at that documentary Brent Stein was talking about. All these things have to coordinate together in order to get the output. Here's some of the other ones. Got the mass of the nucleus. When atoms are formed, there's going to be that nuclei, which has protons and neutrons. And so the mass of those things is going to be constant throughout the universe, depending on how many protons and how many neutrons you have. In other words, if you have one element, like helium and hydrogen are very light elements. They only have two protons and neutrons. But that mass is going to be constant in all the different elements. As a matter of fact, carbon, which is a heavier element, is necessary. All scientists agree that carbon is the necessary building block of life. And so one of the questions they're debating and trying to figure out is, how do you get from a lighter, simple element to heavier, complicated elements? And the atheistic scientists would say, well, given an infinite amount of time, if the universe is infinite, then just at random bumping into each other, usually more complicated molecules and atoms are created by just the random bumping in to each other. And when they bump into each other, a proton or a neutron can fly off and go to another one, and then you got a new element going. Okay, so that's a second force in the universe that needs to be fine-tuned, as it were. Another one is the ratio of the strong nuclear force to the electromagnetic force. So you can't have too strong of a nuclear force, an expelling force. It has to be just this much stronger than the magnetic force. The power pulling apart has to be this strong compared to the power holding things together. Another one, the initial entropy of the universe, that if the universe just began, it couldn't have begun with all sorts of order. It had to have a certain form of disorder, chaos. The planets weren't formed yet. If there was a big bang, and most great scientists today believe that the matter of that first big bang, and of course I always think of, who put the ball of matter there in the first place. That's where you got to come up with a God. And God made it, and he put it together in such a way that when it exploded, the incredible elements of the universe started forming, and we got life. See, that's kind of the answer to the question of the debate over creation versus evolution. And I don't even like those two terms as being sort of either or. If you could say you don't believe in creation, in other words, that there was no creative element, there was no Big Bang, that either the universe has existed for all eternity, or that one universe started, collapsed, another one started, another one collapsed. You can't really justify saying that there was no Big Bang, because all scientists know that all the matter in the universe, all the galaxies, are flying apart. So if they're flying apart, then billions of years ago they were together. That's a part of it. Let me just go through these other things. There's the electron mass, the little size of the electron, the little ping pong balls zipping around the nucleus, which are bigger. The mass of the down quark. Now that's another tiny subatomic particle. The mass of the up quark. The strong nuclear force. The electromagnetic force. And the expansion rate of the universe. Okay, there's about 10 of them there that I just named off. And Stephen Meyer says he uses this with his students. He says, imagine you had a universe-making machine, and all these dials, you had to get all these dials just exactly right. And if you got just one off just a tiny bit, you're not going to be able to create a universe. So black holes are one thing, and I'm not calling black holes Sasquatch, but the positing of dark matter is what I think we can challenge our scientific friends on, because they're positing dark matter because the calculations, the things that are happening in the universe, only make sense if you have so much mass. You need much more mass in the universe for things to happen as they're happening, like galaxies going farther and farther away from each other, or the way they react when they bump into each other, or when a star implodes and turns into a supernova and spews out all of its matter throughout the neighboring area of the universe. Anyways, so they're saying, okay, there must be more mass in the universe than we can appreciate, that we could prove is there. We can only sort of prove that there's this much mass in the universe. But we need more mass to explain the movements of things in the universe. And so therefore, there must be mass that we can't detect, that is impossible to detect. So we'll assume there's mass that's out there that we can't see. That's why I call it the Sasquatch of the cosmologists, because it just doesn't make that much sense, you know? Before the hour ends, I think we got one more break and I'm almost done. Daniel, let's do our third break and maybe I'll be able to wrap it up here in a second. But I'm Father Tom Coyce. Thanks for listening to The Winds of Change. We are AM 750.
The William Baker Festival Singers, directed by Dr. William O. Baker, is a 50-voice semi-professional chorale based in Kansas City. They will join us at St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish for the 5 p.m. Mass on Saturday, April 27th, to perform a short concert of sacred music immediately following liturgy. You are invited to be inspired by the beauty of the music as performed by the William Baker Festival Singers, who are sharing their gifts with us. On Saturday, April 27th, there is no charge for this concert, and there's plenty of free parking. St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish can be found 2 blocks north on Noble, off Division, adjacent to the Kennedy Expressway. Visit stsandschurch.org for more information.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
For 150 years, St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy has been an oasis that builds a moral foundation for your child based upon Catholic faith, virtue, and valor, along with strong academic preparation for children pre-kindergarten through 8th grade. Here's how you can help St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy and have a good time. Come out and play for St. Stan's Academy during the annual Casino Night Fundraiser, Saturday, April 25th at 6 p.m. Enjoy casino games, food, drinks, and great music, all while helping to support St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, Saturday, April 25th at 6 p.m. Now, you must be 21 or over. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is located at 1255 North Noble in Chicago. That's 1 block north on Noble, off Division, just off the Kennedy.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. We're almost done with our hour, but let me try to conclude. I'm trying to make fun of, in some way, the scientists who are inventing things to explain phenomenon that they can't explain and don't want to accept an intelligent designer, a God behind the universe. If you accept a God behind the universe, then that intelligent force can explain some of these things. And the issue of the dark matter is one of the hypothesis that the atheistic scientists are coming up with to explain things they see that they can't explain. So it's an unknown cause. So here's the gist of, if you could remember one thing from this crazy hour, if you're a believer, you're asked to believe in an uncaused cause, God. That goes even way back to Aristotle, Thomas Aquinas too, for sure. So God is that first mover that started moving things. He was the cause that started other causes. If you're a non-believer, you're going to have to put your faith in the unknown cause. You don't know what's causing it, but you believe in something that's unknown. That to me seems even more irrational than believing in an uncaused cause. Anyways, I hope I wrinkled your brain a little bit, and we'll see you back next time. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You've been listening to The Winds of Change on AM 750.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred, the time is now.